Good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone to this morning's study session for the Mesa City Council for Thursday, May 24th, 2012. Councilmember Higgins, you on the phone?
I am on the phone this morning, Mayor.
Okay. We'll begin with the first item, which is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the proposed revisions to the nuisance code.
Today to give you just a brief preliminary discussion on the nuisance code. You may recall we were here about a year and a half ago and we did a major upgrade to the nuisance code. It had not been updated for many years prior to that. Over the last year and a half, we found some administrative issues that we need to clean up, and we've got just one or two issues that we're seeking direction on, issues that have come up in communities over the last year and a half. So Laura's going to give a presentation today, and I'd like to just formally introduce Laura as our new Deputy Director for Development and Sustainability. She has taken over responsibility for code enforcement and building inspections. So she's going to give you a presentation today. Again, this is just a preliminary discussion. You do not have an ordinance to consider today. Looking for some direction and just letting you know what we'd like to do as far as administrative cleanup. Laura?
Good morning, Mayor, Council members. The nuisance code is in place to promote health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of Mason. It does this by setting minimum standards for the maintenance of improved and vacant property, basically to reduce potential hazards and the occurrence of blight. If these are not addressed, potentially deteriorating conditions could occur, unattractive neighborhoods, and the loss of property value. The nuisance code also sets minimum standards for large animal and livestock, their location, care, maintenance of those properties, and also the residential rental inspections. As Christine stated today, we're looking for feedback on some proposed changes to the nuisance code. These include the administrative changes to the code. I'll review a couple of those. It also includes some new definitions and also expansion of existing definitions to cover some of the changes that were adopted by council in February of 2011. We've also added some clarifications. The intent is to add some very specific numerical quantities so that there is a measurable, in some cases, especially when it comes to landscaping, measurable criteria for determination when a violation has occurred. We think this is going to be clearer for both the residents in the community or the property owners and also the code officers. Also, under clarifications, reformatting has existed. Some of those sentences got very long, paragraphs got very large, and just by breaking those out in a more bullet-pointed format, we think that's going to be easier for people to understand. Whoops. We'd also like to seek direction on the screening of boats and utility trailers, and then also get your recommendations on next steps in this process. With regard to administrative procedures, we've added a provision that allows for interpretation of the nuisance code by the city manager or their designee. I've been doing this job a short amount of time, but I've found there's just an awful lot of nuances out there that exist in the field, and this need for the ability to interpret the code is very important, and it also needs to be done consistently. We've also added a provision that allows a civil hearing officer to reduce sanctions if there are extraordinary circumstances or something special about the case, the citation. It gives him the discretion to reduce the sanctions. And then finally, we are updating the code to include a reference to the Arizona Rules of Civil Procedure for serving notices of violation and citations. An example of a new definition is the definition of accessible. With the adoption of the code in 2011 that allowed for residential rental inspections, we've been implementing that for more than a year now. During that process, we've come up with a need to maybe define what those inspections will be. And the new definition explains that the inspections will be limited to areas that are readily accessible. So the inspectors will not be required to climb over or remove obstacles to make an inspection on an interior. but that they will see what there is to be seen. The definition of accessibility is coming from the building codes, which already deal with inspections, so we are basically taking that language and including it in here.
So, Laura, if I didn't want anyone to inspect, I could put something in front there that would reduce the accessibility, and I could block an inspection?
Yes, that is true, but generally these inspections are requested by either the property owner or the tenant, somebody that wants an inspection to occur. But correct, that could occur. We just don't want to put our inspectors in a situation where they could be harmed or they could be doing property damage. If the expectation is to be removing drywall to uncover a mold situation, we don't want them in the position of damaging property.
Okay. There's always a way around.
The definition of blight already, as it's written, really defines what blight could be seen as: the accumulation of litter and holes and cracks. We are expanding that definition again to just further clarify for property owners and code officers what blight means. General damage to the integrity of the construction of a building or structure. I've been seeing property that has just been neglected for years and years and has really fallen into disrepair, and it really is no longer has structural integrity. And this is a provision that was added over the last year, or this is a definition that we'd like to expand. Also, the uncontrolled growth of landscaping and untended damage, it refers to the neglect that is occurring on some properties. Here is an example of a motel on Main Street that I think really illustrates what blight is. This structure has now been demolished. It was, the structural integrity had been compromised in several locations. As you can see, it's boarded, vacant, boarded up. The doors are not secured. People are going in there, causing trouble. The yard, the weeds are growing. It's just, certainly not an attractive thing to see along Main Street.
Laura, what if they had a fence around that? Does that change our ability to access or the ability to site if they put a fence around it?
If that fence is opaque, 6-foot-high, solid wall that you cannot see through, then what occurs on the inside? They would still need to comply with the use in there, so they can't, if it was zoned for residential, couldn't be storing. But if there are weeds growing, but if it's behind a solid wall, not visible from the public right away.
Let's say it is visible. Let's say it's, most of these are temporary chain link fences.
Then they do need to keep the weeds under control. Okay. It needs to be attractive. Anything that's visible from the public right of way. Oops. In 2011, the provision for garage sale and what would be allowed and not allowed was really clearly defined. It could occur 4 times a year anywhere on the property, but it was not intended to be a commercial use, and it was not intended to have the sale of new merchandise. We're now adding a definition of garage sale in the definitions because we're finding that as people get cited for this, we need to clearly define what a garage sale it is. It's also often called a yard sale, a carport sale. All of these things fall into this category of garage sale. So if we've added a new definition for that. Here's a picture of one. Yes?
Excuse me, Mayor.
Go ahead.
Had we had any feedback on the garage sale issue of 4 times, or have there been any complaints? People are upset they can't have more, anything like that?
In the short amount of time that I've been doing this job, which is about 60 days, I have not had any complaints. I do, one of the code officers is managing a situation where that property owner was having garage sales every single weekend. His neighbors were very upset about it. This provision that was adopted in 2011 has allowed him to really work with that property owner to reduce those sales to 4 times a year, and the neighbors are very pleased with the result. So that is the example that I've heard of. I'm not sure if others are upset.
Okay.
Councilman Higgins, this is Christine. Since we've had it, I have not heard any complaints on the four times per year. That had actually been an interpretation when there were questions of how many times can I have a garage sale. We had consistently been hearing that definition from the zoning administrator. So it's been in place. We just adopted it formally in the code, but I've not had any complaints against it. More often, it's neighbors that are happy because they're not seeing those frequent garage sales.
Great, thank you.
In your definition itself, do you use those multiple terms? Say we've defined garage sale and such as. Now, you've included yard sale and all those other things in your actual definition.
Okay. Yes.
To make sure that you pull them all in.
You sell your yard?
Okay. And I will review that again before we bring it back to you to make sure. But I think that was the intent. Another thing that was done with this update is to really add those specific quantities. Here's an example: vegetation trimming above sidewalks needs to be at a minimum of 8 feet, over streets and alleys a minimum of 14 feet, just so that it's very clear for people what the expectations are. There isn't that opportunity or, you know, that unknown out there and different interpretations by different code officers.
Okay, Laura. Councilmember Pender.
Yes.
Having had an experience with this before your time, what I found was the first notice out seemed pretty severe and phone was ringing off the hook. Again, I can tell you don't remember this, but I remember it keenly, probably within the last year and a half working with Dan at transportation. So a kind first notice would be appreciated. That way they're educated. You know, we try and educate first, and then they have an opportunity to say what ifs and maybe help engineering if they have a challenge, and then you know, a progressive method of achieving the goal here would be great because, that would be greatly appreciated, and I think people always, appreciate being educated first before enforced on. So,
yes, and we will note that Alex Finter is advocating a progressive approach.
Oh, great. Different meetings, yeah.
I think you've been sitting next to Dennis too long.
Thank you.
That is so wrong.
I'm coming before you today to request some direction, and I know you've had extensive conversation on this. I've been doing ride-alongs with code officers, and this is an example that was brought up to me, and I wanted to bring it back to you. And that has to do with the screening of watercraft, utility trailers, and campers. The nuisance code, the code that was adopted in 2011, allowed people to park watercraft, utility trailers, and campers behind the front face of their home, behind the plane. It no longer required them to be behind a fence or a wall and to be screened. The zoning code, which then regulates RVs, travel trailers, still requires those items to be behind a wall or a gate. So the question is, here's an example. These two homes are located two doors apart. This person has what appears to be a pontoon boat covered by a gray tarp parked in the side of his house. Behind that front plane of the garage, two doors down, we have a travel trailer parked behind the front plane of the house. The person with this travel trailer has gotten a courtesy notice and has come back to the code officer with the question of why two doors down we have somebody with something behind a gray tarp. So I just wanted, it's a question of fairness in this neighborhood, and I just wanted to come to council to make sure that that was the intent, and just to point out that this is what's going on between the nuisance code and the...
The trailer's an RV?
The trailer is correct.
Is that the definition? A travel trailer is an RV?
Well, an RV, travel trailer...
It states travel trailer. In the code, it says RVs, travel trailers, and that's it.
That's my understanding.
I'm looking at Mr. Sheffield back there.
Mayor, Council, the definition of recreational vehicle includes travel trailers, fifth wheels, pop-up campers, those types of vehicles that can be towed and possibly can be used as a residence.
Now, was that, Not remembering, I can't remember when we talked about this. Sorry about that.
Right.
I'm sorry, what?
It was part of the zoning for that thing.
Yeah, I know. I know we did. I just can't remember the discussion. Did we bring up the fact that there are other things you can tow besides things that people can actually sleep in?
When we were doing the zoning code update, quite honestly, when we were looking at the recreational vehicle and manufactured home section, we didn't pay a lot of attention to screening because the council had adopted the screening requirements for RVs about, I want to say, 6 or 7 years ago. So we didn't raise that question, quite honestly, during the update.
I remember we had a big discussion on part of the zoning code as far as setbacks and RVs, but I don't remember getting into the discussion about screening.
And staff didn't raise the question because we felt because the council had acted on that not that long ago, and so we didn't raise it as a question for the council.
But we did have some issues as far as air conditioner placement and whether the setback came from the air conditioner and all that, and RVs came into that because, you know, the fact was if your air conditioner happened to be on one side or the other. I remember having that discussion. So we never really got into a difference between the different items you can tow behind your car.
No, we had a discussion about the length of the RV and about the placement of the RV, but we didn't discuss screening.
So really the problem that we have now, you can have a trailer, a boat covered in plastic unscreened, and you can have an RV that has to be screened. So it seems inequitable, and basically what we're asking for hopefully is direction. Would you like it to be consistent?
Which is the inequitable, the fact that we make somebody screen or the fact that we don't make somebody screen? I mean, I think that's when you get into equitable, I would rather focus on what's the right thing to do.
Okay.
And to me, I think, you know, whether they screen it or not, I think ugly gray tarps should be up. That's the most hideous thing about that is that ugly gray tarp.
That's the question, sir.
You're leaping to the fact that somehow screening RVs is the right thing to do, but we've realized now that we create these situations which are, just don't seem like they're commonsensical. It just, whether you treat them the same, is it the right thing to do? And I don't know. My guess is that in Mesa, Arizona, as I drive around, these are not the only examples of people who park things that can be towed behind them. Back in that little notch behind the front of the house, but on the side of the house.
Mm-hmm. There's many.
And they're on their property. This is interesting because on one of these, they have, on the trailer, they have put a concrete slab there. On the other one, it's just parked on dirt. So I think there's maybe some other issues. Mr. Richens?
As a person who has an unscreened boat on the side of his house, I'm going to speak for all unscreened boat owners.
Don't we have a blatant conflict of interest here, Ms. Spinner?
Absolutely. I don't know. If I wanted to live in an HOA, I'd move into one. That's the bottom line. And people who have a problem with some of this stuff should probably choose to live in an HOA. We've had some neighborhood conflicts recently in a neighborhood that, over a variety of issues, parking, commercial trucks and all kinds of different things. And if we want to micromanage every neighborhood, I guess we could do that. I don't know that we could actually afford to do that. So at some point we have to decide, we have neighborhoods in Mesa that don't have HOAs that are going to have less stringent rules. And then we're going to have neighborhoods in Mesa that are HOAs that they will be able to self-determine what their rules are. And I fully support them in doing that. But, you know, I hear comments a lot from people that say, I love this neighborhood. I would never live in an HOA neighborhood. And I'm very concerned about encroaching too far onto becoming a giant City of Mesa HOA. And I think that's the slippery slope we need to be very careful of. And for those that really are troubled by seeing a travel trailer on the side of a house, you know, sorry. Or my boat, sorry. But
well, it depends, you know, what color of tarp do you have on your boat?
It actually matches the boat and the trailer. It's very tasteful.
You're very fashion sensitive. I like that.
Thank you. I've gone out of my way for that. But you start getting to an issue where you have, you know, some boats are short, some boats are tall, like the one in the example here. Some are short that have a big, you know, wakeboard tower on top. So how are we going to count that? I mean, mm-hmm. I think we could, in any number of ways, find the ability to regulate people's use of their property. I think we really need to start, we need to be careful about that kind of thing and not create a giant, but you know, let's ask our neighbors, let's be respectful. If my neighbor had a problem with my boat where it is, I would move it. Nobody's expressed a problem to me. I don't know how approachable I am, I don't know. But, you know, that's the kind of dialogue that has to happen in neighborhoods, that if we have these disputes, we have to have a dialogue about, hey, you know, that great tarp is really unfashionable on the side of your house. You know, then you have those conversations. So anyway, that's...
Well, so what you're saying is, I mean, because what this is what we're saying is that the travel trailer is legal under our code, the boat is not.
Right, and the travel...
So you would move toward saying both of them should be legal. Yep.
Mayor.
Sorry.
It's reversed. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. The trailer is not. The trailer is supposed to be screened. The boat is okay under our current code. You would move towards saying neither one of them should have to be screened if this neighborhood.
Yeah, behind the front face of the house.
Behind
but
the front face.
There is a nuance with travel trailers, in that you can live in them, and that creates a situation there that's a little bit different than a boat or a work trailer.
So if somebody's living in it, I mean, does that make a difference?
I don't know.
I don't know.
That's well, maybe something that might be worth talking about, because if there's somebody that's using it as an accessory living quarters, you know, that's a whole separate issue then.
It's a whole separate zoning issue, though, isn't it?
Mayor, Councilmember Richards, the current zoning ordinance would prohibit someone from living in an RV when it's being stored on a single residence lot.
Okay, yeah.
So
I know the code prohibits it, but I know
people do it.
That have So do we want to address that as a separate issue, or do we just want to go the other way to where, hey, if it's behind the front face of the house, it's the front face of your house?
Well, from what I'm hearing, them living in it is already addressed in the zoning code.
Oh, yeah.
And our compliance officers could take action on that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So yeah, the question is, and I agree with you that we seemingly have a very similar situation that's handled in different ways, so we have a conflict in our code. I think Councilman Kavanaugh had a question.
I just finish real quick. There's an issue of scale here, too, on travel trailers. You have your large diesel pusher that can exceed the size of the house. You know, parking that on the side of the house is one thing versus a pop-up trailer or a tow trailer like this, which is much smaller in scale. So I don't know how that is addressed in the code, if it's a separate thing. But I mean, obviously, if a diesel pusher that's parked by on the side of the house is bigger than the house,
our current code doesn't address height. address.
So is there a height issue that we might want to consider?
Location.
The current zoning ordinance just defines RVs and says screen RVs. It doesn't care what the size is.
So and a 6-foot opaque screen is sufficient for
yes.
that, right? So even if the diesel pusher is 12 feet tall, you screen the grill with that regulation,
or maybe the bottom of the windshield.
Hey, nice. Okay. So I mean that's the kind of gyrations we've tried to get ourselves.
Well, but the fact is that you do create, even with you, if you have a wall there, it creates a visual break, and the view is much different when even a 10 or 12 foot RV is parked behind a wall as opposed to parked in front of us. It's a very different visual presentation from the street. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Yeah, I guess I don't have an opinion yet on direction, on which way to go. I'm a little curious as to how consistent Valley Cities are in dealing with the same issue. If the vast majority of other Valley Cities are require screening or don't require screening, I mean, that's the issue when people move from city to city. They don't necessarily understand the political boundary distinctions, but I'm just curious in terms of whether what we have now is consistent, inconsistent. That might help me form an opinion on direction.
Why don't we bring back some of that information, and unless there's some other information.
Well, no, we can, but you bring up another point I have. Is it legal to park a car on an unpaved surface?
It's unpaved or dustproof.
Well, on DG, for example, granite.
My understanding is the code allows you to do if it's adjacent to the driveway.
Okay, so, for example, where that boat is, I could park a car there for daily use.
If you had DG, we've interpreted DG to be dustproof.
Well, that one appears to have rocks or DG on it, so that would be okay. All right. So, I mean, I think the guy with the travel trailer or the guy with the boat, the guy with the travel trailer, I'm sorry, I'll get these straight one of these days, has a legitimate issue, and this is where government can prove how silly it is sometimes, because if I'm a person, I look at the two, I don't know the difference between
That looks like, is that a fifth wheel? No, that's, yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. I don't know the difference between a fifth wheel and a very large party boat, pontoon boat. Sorry, what?
Apparently you do.
Well, I can't tell because of that, because of that incredible great harp on it. It's hard to see what it really is. But, I mean, if I'm a neighbor and you're citing me for parking my thing there and I look at my neighbor two doors down, I'm probably shaking my head going, you're kidding me, right? Mm-hmm. And you really can't fault the person for having that incredible look, because it does create to me sort of a inexplicable situation. And like I said, these are probably two of thousands in our almost 140 square miles of boats and stuff. Even in West Mesa, where there are people who do park their boats, even with color-coordinated tarps by the side of their house. I've heard that, too.
I've also heard that boats and RV sales generate a boatload, even, of sales tax revenue.
A boatload. So we could combine the two and say you could have a yard sale or garage sale selling boats on the side of your house, right?
Four times a year.
Okay, why don't we refine that? Because I think there are some inconsistencies here. And the fact is that if we're going to hit those items of code compliance that really make a difference, and that's the blight items and the things like that, we need to have a consistency in what our codes are. And I think you've pointed out, common sense would say that this is an inconsistency. And I don't know where to draw the line, because the question is, if you had a really nice $250,000 RV and you could fit it in behind the front of your house, we're saying, are we moving toward you could do that? And I don't know, maybe that's the price we have to pay. I don't know. So why don't you come back with it to us? Is that okay, Council? All right.
Thank you.
So we would like your recommendation on next steps.
Another item, as I was going through the materials, I noticed that we were tinkering a little bit with the definition of graffiti, and we were I've been working with the gang unit a little bit about some graffiti issues in our community, and so I just would encourage you to get with PD to make sure that the definition of graffiti in our own ordinance fits some of the tools that they need, and we're exploring a lot of different things, but just we're probably going to have a, get with them and make sure that we have that right.
Okay.
I'd appreciate that.
Sure. We will get back to you on the screening issue, and probably after the break, potentially come back with an ordinance to introduce.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, once again, whatever you do, let's look toward our objective. We want to make this easy for our code compliance, easy also for our citizens to understand. Mm-hmm. And to hit the ultimate goal. I mean, there are things that are obvious here, and I would.
Let's not draft the ordinance up until we get a more.
Yeah,
right. We'll come back.
I know personally, and I can't speak for the others. I would prefer we concentrate on the first items you talked about, dilapidated properties, those kind of things, and
what,
like Alex brought up, how we look at overgrowth, because those are things that really matter. Where we park our boats and stuff, you know. It's easy to get bogged down in that kind of thing, but I don't know that that's the most important thing. I think the other stuff's more important. That's my personal opinion. Anyone?
Thank you.
Okay.
As long as they're not creating an auto ball in the front yard.
All right. Acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. Have a motion from Councilmember Kavanaugh, a second from Councilmember Glover. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. I forgot to bring my hat in. I'm sorry. I should have brought my Whittier hat in. Whittier. Oh, yes.
Yeah, go ahead. I just had one thing I remember.
Oh, okay. Yesterday I had the great opportunity to attend the celebration of Whittier Elementary, which is on Longmore and 8th Street, that corner. Great example of what can happen when in our city when people really put their mind to excellence, A-plus school designation. The thing that makes Whittier so special is that it's in an older area of our neighborhood, an area where you have a lot of third and fourth generation families who live there, who have stayed in there. You have a lot of new families, a very diverse neighborhood. People would say that you probably have some of these issues in these neighborhoods because they're older stock house. And so the initial thought is, oh, that's not one school that would excel. And it's Principal Mr. Starkey out there, and the staff and the community have come together to create something really special. So congratulations to Whittier on their A-plus school designation. And it was a lot of fun going out there and joining in and participating in that celebration. So, Councilman Richens.
Very cool. Yeah, congratulations to Whittier. I attended a seminar on renewable energy incentive districts, which was really fascinating. And I have some information to bring back to our energy division as we're trying to work on in some renewable energy into the portfolio that we have. But there's apparently a new law the legislature passed a year or so ago that enables renewable energy in certain areas in your city. So it's really fascinating. Thanks.
Good. Councilmember Higgins?
I'm good, Mayor.
You're not going to report on your little get-together?
Oh.
No, I guess you would. I'll take that as a no. Okay.
She don't care.
Would somebody please check on Councilmember Higgins? It sounded like she took a tumble or something like that. I guess I'll report. Tuesday morning, several of us had... You back?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I actually hit the wrong button. go ahead, though. It sounds better over your mic.
Oh, so you want me to report on it?
Go ahead.
Okay. Tuesday morning, I had the opportunity, and several of us did, of attending the fourth annual Interfaith Prayer Breakfast, where we had many members of our community get together to discuss items of importance. Had the privilege of hearing new ASU football coach Todd Graham speak. So it was a great event that was well attended, and was really nice to see all the different parts of our community come together. If you've never heard Rodney Glassman do a Hebrew prayer as a cantor would do, it's pretty amazing. It's just mesmerizing. So it's pretty. So okay, anything else? All right, Mr. Brady.
Yes, and let me just say that it really is a great event, and appreciate the councilwoman organizing that and all the staff that helped her. That's a lot of work that goes into that. So
yeah, that's Dina Higgins. Brainchild and idea, and she's been the driving force, so thank you, Councilmember Higgins.
It's a great event.
You are welcome.
Just a reminder, no council meeting this Monday, Memorial Day, but we will have a study session next Thursday, and the day before that, Wednesday, May 30th, next week, we'll have the groundbreaking. I'm not sure if we're actually breaking any ground, but we're ceremonial groundbreaking for the light rail extension. So we'll be doing that at 8 a.m. In downtown Mesa at Robeson between Main and Pepper.
The official commencement of construction activities.
Commencement of construction. Thank you.
Okay.
That's it.
Thank you. Ms. Crocker, do we have any requests to speak?
No requests, Mayor.
All righty. Motion to go into executive session. From Councilmember Richens, a second from Councilmember Fenter. All in favor say aye.
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 We're now moving into executive session. Thank you very much.